From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 29th day of May, 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes. She's from Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, Jonathan Kappas, Ag Policy Specialist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, will join us to take up the disaster aid bill that's been making its way through Congress. It's been stopped a couple of times, but it is likely to pass the full House once they come back from recess. And the Senate's already passed that bill. He'll explore what's not in the package and what is in the package and how it does and does not pertain to prevent plant. Quote, it doesn't, at least at this point. And what it means for those acres that have been flooded, actually flooded, and declared disaster. We'll do all of that, and we'll check out the weather forecast, too, with Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Wednesday afternoon, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson now joins us to talk about the market. Oh, what a wild one this has been this week, and corn was down for a while this morning. Is that because there were a whole bunch of old and new crop sales potentially made? Do we have an idea?
I think that is a reasonable explanation, that once we got up to the levels we did, that guys started pulling triggers or they had orders sitting there. And we know that, you know, when something like that happens, the elevator co-op, whoever you're selling it to, sells the board, because in case they, you know, paid too much for it. And so it's kind of a natural trigger. This still seems to be, you know, more of a short covering rally than anything else. Now, though, I looked at managed money. You know, managed money lifted about 140 of the shorts last week. So they're down to only like 30,000 short. But managed money can't go straight short. So that means that those were spreads. And so what they were doing was they were lifting their spreads, and they were lifting the short side, which technically should push the market higher, which would improve their long position. We're going to get to a point where they're going to start to spread again. You know, in other words, they'll start to sell against it. They'll start to take profits and they'll start to sell. And so this has got to be, Todd, I think in the 20 some years I've gotten this, probably the most difficult marketing year that I have ever seen. And now we have people calling, you know, they sold grain ahead and you can't blame them for that. Buying calls, you know, just to protect themselves. A couple of weeks ago, I put out a broadcast saying, buy courage calls. If you're nervous about selling old crop, buy courage calls, because if the market really takes off, this will give you the courage to make the sale without having to be concerned about the market continuing to go higher. And so now we have people, now that we've gone this high, calling in on to buy calls. But, you know, it makes sense. That the other part of it is very difficult to determine exactly what yield is going to be, even if you've got the crop in the ground. I mean, we've been cooler than normal. There's just so many things out there in the background. So I think if there's ever been a year that it's important for producers to use the markets to buy a put, you know, and have some protection, this is the year to do it, because, you know, if you're using the market, it doesn't require delivery. And delivery could be a big issue this year.
So we have just a tremendous number of corn acres and all kinds of soybean acres that need to be planted yet. How will the market deal with it? Because I think what you just told me was that what we've seen so far is just the funds getting out,
mm-hmm,
and a rally on that part. And we're still waiting, in your opinion, and I suspect some of the weather, of course, is built in here, but we're really waiting for the other shoe to drop. Is that correct in your opinion?
Well, that's my opinion, yes, because, you know, I anticipate, you know, if Illinois and Indiana get a break and that they're going to plant beyond the crop insurance date, you know, and maybe all the way through that window if they've got that opportunity. We have been hearing from other people, rather than planting beans because they're afraid of weed control, that they've actually switched over to some extra corn acres. And as surprising as that might be, it really isn't surprising. I mean, you know, it's a situation where you've got rent that you got to pay on this land. You've got everything. If you, you know, it isn't easy to break even on just prevent the plant. And so we saw that in Gary's article, you know, that this is a tough year to try and do that. And so I think that in general, what we really need, like they're talking at, you know, after we get through this stretch right now, that we could go to more moderate or lighter rain, which could be a benefit to some of that that's already planted, and above normal temperatures. And so who knows? You know, this is corn is strange. Corn has its individual times that you have to have this done by this, by this, by this. That's how it's been the benefit of beans, because beans are like a weed. They keep on, you know, they can drop pods and put them back on. So this is a very, very difficult time.
Yeah, so it's a very difficult year for producers to make decisions. They're still trying to figure out how to put a crop in the ground. Congress is in the midst of all kinds of things, MFP, disaster paid payments. We'll talk about those in just a bit with Jonathan Kappas. And you know, you mentioned Gary Schnitke. There will be a Farm Doc Daily posting today from him and the rest of the company talking about some of the decision processes that producers can use. You're getting calls from producers all over the place. They're worried, I assume, about accumulator contracts, worried that they don't have a crop in the ground that they already sold.
Yep.
And they will have to make delivery. So they've been, there's just all sorts of things that are happening in this marketplace.
Yeah.
And you cannot just sit back and watch, I don't think.
Well, I agree with you. You cannot sit back and watch, because what will happen is, you know, and you've heard me say it so many times already, you know, doing nothing is still a marketing decision. And so, you know, if you do nothing, it basically eats you alive, you know, from an emotional standpoint. And this is an extremely difficult emotional market that we're in at this stage. And so, you know, for guys to just say, well, it'll get better, or the government's going to save me, or whatever it might be, this, you know, hope is not a strategy. It's not, you got to have a plan. And so I think if there's ever been a time that they need to have that plan and to execute something, it's now, because we don't know. You know, next week we could be talking about some great planting weather coming in, and we could slam a bunch of acres in, and, you know, we just don't know.
So at this point, there will be some in the Dakotas, Nebraska, part of Minnesota, Kansas, that have reached their prevent plant date, plus they have another 20 days. So that was, what, May 25 plus 20. That'll put you out to, what, June 14 or something like that.
14th of June. And then May 31st for some of them.
Yeah, Iowa's May 31 and the up and the lower part of Minnesota. And then June 5 for Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, which is next Wednesday. But you add 20 days into all of those for the drop dead dates. So there's just a lot of decisions that have to be made over that time period. Now, for those who do have a corn crop in the ground, and in Iowa, there's what, 76% of the corn is planted. And you have corn planted in Illinois up to 35%. Do they need to go ahead and trigger at some of these levels, maybe coverage for, you know, to finish the crop insurance out? Have you discussed this with them? What's the strategy for them?
We've talked about every angle, just what I think you can think of when it comes to this. And I think they do, you know, if they have confidence, let's say you look at it and say, you know, I have 200 bushels to the acre. I feel confident I'm going to get 150. Okay. Then you need to do that. You have to really talk to each individual guy, because he knows what, you know, what his farm can or cannot do. And so for those guys, they need to be rewarding this particular rally. And if they get triggered, you know, they also need to not beat themselves up because the futures went higher. If you get triggered by a call, if that's the case, you know, if you're worried about it going much higher, but you have to do something, because if you do nothing, now we saw how fast it was today, you know, boom, we're up there and we're so positive, and just like that, we're negative. You know, that's the kind of roller coaster that you don't want to be on. You want to have a plan and stick with your plan. You may moderate it, but you still have to have that plan.
Thanks so much, Jackie.
Thank you, Todd. You have a great day.
You too. Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online, listen to us on demand at willag.org, willag.org. You'll also find the latest from the Farm Doc Daily team there each and every business day of the year. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, now joined by agricultural policy specialist here on the U of I campus, Jonathan Kappas, to discuss the current year and all the things that are happening in Washington, D.C. as it relates to the very late planting season and the trade aid package that the Trump administration has put forward. Let's start with the trade aid package, and then we'll get to the disaster aid package that is making its way through Congress. The two, I think, may actually be related in some form, but you're going to have to help me out with that one. So the trade aid package. Up front, to be clear, this package, the MFP2, simply says we're going to pay based on a county-wide average, roughly speaking, and you're going to get paid per acre. But clearly, we don't want to influence whether things are planted or not. However, it says if you don't plant, you don't get the MFP.
What they have said on their announcement, I think we have to sort of caveat all of this right up front, is that we have none of the final details on this program. They've kind of tucked this away into some press releases, and we don't know exactly how this thing's going to work. And so we got a lot of guesswork and a lot of questions that need to be answered. Based on what we know at this point, which is based on the announcements by USDA officials, is that there will be a single county rate that covers all commodity acres planted in that county. So they're going to use sort of a basket of commodities based on the planting in the county to come up with some single county rate. And then in order to get that payment, which will be broken into three tranches, so you won't get all of it up front. It'll come in three different phases. Likely the last two are technically, to be determined based on trade negotiations and whatnot. But that will go on the acres planted in that county for your farm, and we presume it'll be on an FSA farm by FSA farm basis. So the acres you plant in 2019 on the FSA farm will then receive the single county payment rate to be determined by USDA. So if all of that is not clear enough, that's sort of where we stand on at this point in time. It is a big concern, we think, and we're working with Gary Schnicki and some of the Farm Doc team to get an article out today that tries to break this down into some different decision options to understand. While USDA says they do not want to impact planting decisions, obviously tying a payment to a decision to plant is going to have some impact, particularly when we consider the spring situation we have. And so the big question is, well, how much is this payment going to be? Because that then factors into a comparison between potential revenue from a planted crop, depending on how late that crop gets in, as compared to your crop insurance prevent plan payment. We really need to see the math. I think USDA has to be very transparent on how they get to this county rate because of that very question. You are going to have situations in which you have farmers who farm in two different counties, or their neighbors get a different payment than they do, and it's just going to raise concerns and questions on how those payment rates by county are calculated. It will certainly be impacted by, these counties that plant different crops than their neighbors, or the more diverse those county planting situations are, the more it's going to be factored into those crops, the relative values of those crops, on and on and on. It raises a host of confusion and question that I think, again, we need more details on.
Okay, so there are a couple of other things that are now linked, I believe, but I'm not certain about this, with the MFP payments to the disaster aid payment that many farmers have been asking. So I think in the disaster package, it may say there's a $125,000 limit. I read that in one package, but I don't know whether that was the House version. I don't know whether it's in the Senate version or not, which is what the House is actually taking up.
Yeah, so the version of, so there's two different things, and I think at this stage, it's probably best not to try to link them too closely unless we get more clarity on that. What has happened in Congress then is a separate kind of what we would consider more of the ad hoc kind of supplemental disaster assistance. And this is This is designed for the hurricanes, the wildfires, and the floods that we've seen in the last year and a half. And I'm not sure on the payment limit. There's some confusion about what they're doing with the payment limit, so I think we set that aside until we get more details. What we do know is that the Senate passed a bill that is pending in the House, and they're on recess for Memorial Day week. Recess, the two attempts so far that the House has made to kind of pass this by unanimous consent have been blocked by individual members of the House. And so we're stalled out a little bit, but we expect that next week when they're back in session that this will be passed. Tucked into that provision, or into that supplemental package from Congress, is a provision that would allow the secretary, for those counties that have been hit by hurricanes, by the drought, or excuse me, by the floods, the hurricanes and the wildfires. We haven't had the other yet, but those counties that got hit by the floods in particular and the hurricanes, it would allow the secretary to pay up to 90% of a preventive planning insurance indemnity. So again, there's a lot of potential there, but not a lot of clarity on exactly how USDA will implement it. So it gives the secretary a lot of discretion as far as how far up to that 90% to pay on those areas where they were flooded out, for example.
Yes, that's way different than not being planted in the wet spring. That's only flooded acres, not I'm here in Champaign County and I didn't get planted because it rained too much.
So that's our understanding. The way it's worded in that provision of the appropriations bill is it's tied to those counties that were hit by the hurricanes, the wildfires, and the flooding. And what we don't know at this stage is how they'll define those counties, whether they have to have been declared a disaster by a certain date, and sort of there's a lot of details that USDA is going to need to come out with on that. But the way that I read this in the legislative text pending before the House is that it's going to be just those counties tied specifically to those events, like the floods we've unfortunately seen this winter and spring in places like Nebraska and western Iowa and now along the Mississippi River as well. So if you're thinking from Champaign County, where we've had this wet, difficult spring, but not a sort of catastrophic flooding situation like we've seen in other parts of the country, I would not expect that bump up in insurance to be applicable. But again, we don't have it. It's as determined by the secretary. So USDA will have pretty broad discretion on what they want to do with it.
There is one other thing. So it's 90% if you had crop insurance and 70% if you didn't, correct?
That's correct. If you'd purchased crop insurance, and so you can get up to, you can basically get, if you figure that you can get the 55% on prevent, it potentially moves it up another 35% to 90. Again, depending on what the secretary does with it. If you didn't have crop insurance, there's a 70% limit, and then there's a requirement for both that you purchase crop insurance in the following year. So there's some of those provisions too that play come into play. But this is, again, this is a separate bit of relief that Congress is passing that's separate from the MFP. How the two work together, or if they do, we don't yet know, because at this point, clearly to get the insurance prevent planting, you cannot plant. But it's looking, you know, with the flood situation and for the MFP, they are saying at least at this point that you're going to have to plant something. So in that case, they should not align on the same acres. But I think we are in a state of uncertainty at this point. And I think one of the things that's frustrating about this is, again, the timing. There's enough uncertainty for farmers right now this spring trying to sort out how to deal with the weather and price issues and on and on. And now we're sort of layering in some of these things that maybe could have waited, particularly the MFP program. But we're trying to get some estimates out. We'll have some stuff out later today on Farm Doc Daily that'll break down some of these options and try to think through, you know, what kind of break-even possibilities there might be on these payments and the insurance indemnity and potential crop revenues and so forth.
Thanks so much.
You bet, Todd. It's always good to talk to you. And now stay tuned as we try to learn more.
Jonathan Kopp is Agricultural Policy Specialist right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. On this Wednesday afternoon, we're joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, is there any relief from the rainfall coming for the Midwest?
Well, you know, I think there is a little bit of relief. I do put that in quotation marks, though. We're not going to see the kind of persistent day-after-day rains that we've been seeing in the last few weeks. There will be greater breaks in the precipitation, better opportunities for drying between events, and warmer temperatures in general, and that should help to stimulate a little bit better potential for field work. It's certainly not going to be ideal, and we are going to have to be patient. It's one day at a time type thing. But I think the week of the 6th, from the 6th out through the 12th, we may see our best opportunity for getting into the fields in a more aggressive manner.
We'll need some temperatures to help dry those soils out. Are we going to be in the 80s?
We are going to see some 80-degree temperatures on a fairly frequent basis. I think upper 70s through the middle 80s will be the most common range of temperatures as we move forward through the next week to week and a half. We do have a cool front that comes in next week, probably Sunday into about Tuesday. Might cool us down just a little bit, especially in the eastern Midwest, but we'll turn right around and warm back up again after that.
Let's check in on other growing regions around the world. Where are the problem spots?
Well, there's quite a few at the moment. We are watching Western Australia. You know, that is one of the biggest wheat, barley, and canola producing states in that country, and they haven't had much rain at all for quite a little while. There's been a little bit of planting in the south, but most of that state is in desperate need of significant moisture, and the next 10 days look pretty darn dry there. Then there's the North China Plain. This is also a major grain, oilseed, rice, and cotton production area, even some peanuts in that region. And all of those crops are mostly dependent upon the summer monsoonal rainfalls to occur in order to support the crops in a normal manner. And it hasn't been raining in the North China Plain for quite a little while, and it does not look like they're going to see opportunity for that over, again, the next 10 days to 2 weeks. Temperatures are expected to get hot again. They kind of cooled off in the last couple of days, but they're going to be in the 90s to over 100 degrees during a big part of the coming week. So stress there is going to be increasing. And then there's the western parts of Russia. It looks like there's going to be a ridge of high pressure building up in that particular area as we move forward through the next 10 days. It is not as dry there as it is in these other places I've mentioned, at least not as of today. But the ridge is going to be a somewhat of a persistent feature from central Ukraine into central parts of Kazakhstan. And so areas in between will dry down, including the Volga River Basin area and Russia's southern region. So these areas will eventually get caught up into some dryness and have some stress to deal with. And then there's Canada, and not to be left out, they are probably in worse shape than any of these areas I just mentioned. This is the third growing season of drought in the heart of Saskatchewan. Their canola crop, which had been starting to emerge here in the last few weeks, was frozen by some pretty nasty cold this past weekend and the weekend before that. And there's no moisture in the ground, so the crop is having a tough time recovering. And there's also the problem with replanting. Without the moisture in the ground, these farmers can't do anything about putting more canola in the ground. Some corn and soybeans were also impacted in the eastern Canada prairies, and it looks like the forecast for the prairies in general is still a dry, biased one for at least the next 7 to 10 days. And so the stress there in the heart of the prairies will continue.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it a lot.
All right. You have a great day.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. He joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.